Radio Europe. Richie Allen. Tonight.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, the Bilderberg Group, which we've spoken about in the past on this programme, is meeting for its annual meeting in St. Moritz in Switzerland, which begins tomorrow, I believe, and runs over the course of the weekend. What are the Bilderberg Group? Well, let me tell you what Wikipedia says about the Bilderberg Group. It says the group, the Bilderberg Conference or the Bilderberg Club is an annual, unofficial, invitation-only conference of approximately 140 guests, most of whom are people of influence in the fields of politics, banking, business, the military and news media. The names of attendees are made available to the press. Are they? We'll find out. But the conferences are closed to the public and the media, and no press releases are issued. Because of its exclusivity and privacy, the Bilderberg Group is frequently accused by conspiracy theorists from both extremes of the political spectrum of being an all-powerful secret society, fixing the fate of the world behind closed doors. Critics of Bilderberg conspiracy theories counter that it is nothing more than a policy discussion forum and social club which only serves as a means to brainstorm, to reach consensus and to create social cohesion within the power elite of Western Europe and North American nations to better promote Atlanticism and a neoliberal form of globalization. Now, we have heard from too many people in the past to take that entirely at face value. I'm thinking of people like Jim Mars we've had on this programme. We've spoken with Alex Jones, of course. We've spoken with Michael Rivero and many others. We've not spoken about Bilderberg for some time. I'm fascinated about it. Let's introduce our next guest and see what he has to say. I'm looking forward to talking with him. He's Tony Gosling. Tony is a former BBC journalist. He presents a weekly independent current affairs programme for Bristol Radio, and he's been studying Bilderberg and has formed his own opinions on it and what it is for over 12 years, and it's a pleasure to welcome him to Talk Radio Europe. Tony, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. It's great to talk to you, Tony. Tony, Bilderberg, what is it? Why the secrecy?
Well, first of all, let's just go through that Wikipedia explanation.
Yes.
Because it's an absolute load of nonsense, I'm afraid.
We've lost you for a second. Can you hear us? You know, this is not the first time this has happened when we've discussed this. So there's a bit of a smirk on my face. When we've got Giovanni on, it happens from time to time. And it's happened when we've had Jim Fetzer on as well. So let's try and reconnect with Tony. He's not there. You can't hear me, Tony, no? No, we can't. So we're going to have to take a bit of music. Right, apologies to Sly and the Family Stone. We might play a bit of that later on. Tony, welcome back to the programme. I've got to say, this has happened before when we've interviewed Giovanni Di Stefano, when we've interviewed Dr. Nick Begich, who talks from Alaska about HAARP, and many others. They're cut off and interrupted. But make of that what you will.
Anyway, let's get back to talking
to
about
what we were talking
Wikipedia,
about, exactly.
The Wikipedia explanation you read out there. Another thing is that it's all-powerful. Well, it's not all-powerful. It's powerful, but it's not all-powerful. There's also a lot of reference to Bilderberg having an agenda for a new world order. Well, I'm not really sure that the Bilderbergers have anywhere near a chance of having a new world order, because it's basically just a NATO organization. It's from a one part of the world. The Chinese are never invited to Bilderberg. The Russians are never invited. In fact, only people from the NATO countries go to this meeting. So they're certainly not, they may be pushing for an expansion of NATO, certainly in the NATO zone. But a lot of these, what called straw men are being put up by Wikipedia there. So what we're saying is that there's a lot of stuff which is conjectured about the Bilderberg meetings, which isn't actually what they're really about at all. And this enables, of course, it very, very easy for people like David Aronovich and various other people who try and are really apologists for these, what I would call fascists, is to actually make it easy for people like Aronovich to knock down criticism. So what I'm trying to do is pare down what Wikipedia was saying, you read out there, to something much closer to what this is really all about. The other thing with Wikipedia is I actually registered as an editor on Wikipedia to add a few important facts to the entry about Bilderberg on Wikipedia, and I found literally within seconds of adding important facts which were fully referenced, that bit of information would immediately disappear.
So much for transparency then,
for Wikipedia, the thing that really shocked me into doing something about the Bilderbergs back in 1996 was coming across a list of names. That was, you know, you see the names of the people that go, they really are the most powerful people in the Western world, certainly in the finance world, the military world, and the big business world, and they control most of the money in the Western world, certainly in the NATO zone. And if you think about it, this is really the IMF, the World Bank, and these kind of people, including the Federal Reserve and the central banks of Europe, and the biggest central banks in Europe. So, you know, as you can see, right, what they're doing here is trying to find ways that they can get the criticism that people like I have put out there and knock it down. But I'm afraid that that is kind of becoming more and more difficult. But the key thing for me, which meant that I had to do something about this, is when I discovered that the founder of the organization in 1954 was a former SS officer in the Nazi party, the Nazi military, and that's Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. He actually married Queen Juliana during the Second World War, actually, or just before the Second World War, and he became a sort of neutral citizen during the war. But in the run-up to World War II, he was an enthusiastic member of the SS, and I think any organization which is founded by an SS officer needs a little bit of scrutiny. And the fact that we're being told that, hey, there's nothing to worry about, this is just a private little meeting, I'm afraid it doesn't wash with me. I mean, there's another aspect to all of this, and that is the connections with NATO, because Paul Hauser, who was a general, one of the main of Hitler's generals in the SS Panzer Corps, you know, these giant armies of tanks in the Second World War, is actually quoted as saying that the foreign units of the SS, because there were several units fought in the Second World War which were sympathetic to the Nazi Party, these were actually the precursors of NATO. And that's a direct quote from Paul Hauser, this SS Übersgruppenführer, or general, himself. So there are some, obviously some quite umbilical connections between the present-day NATO and the SS of the Second World War and the Nazi Party. So this is one of the reasons why I really thought, no, hang on a minute, we can't just pass this one by. It's quite important to get some information up on the internet, some hard information and some hard facts, to get rid of some of the conspiracy theories which were around in the mid-90s about Bilderberg, and do a proper journalistic job on this. And I think it's slowly but surely it's paying off. It's eating into their credibility, what I've been doing and what many people around the world have been doing. So, you know, you may say, well, how can you make those connections? But, you know,
no, I don't say that at all, Tony, I don't say that at all. I mean, I'm fascinated by it. I mean, I remember...
Look at what NATO are up to now. If you have a look, I mean, over the last sort of 10 years or so, we've had Kosovo, Iraq, of course, Afghanistan. NATO were the major people in there too. Now we're looking at Libya and NATO's erosion, essentially, of the rule of law. Now, we're not talking about... I'm talking about international law as spelled out in the UN Charter. Now, the UN Charter was signed on the 26th of June 1945 in the wake of World War II, pretty much, as a very comprehensive document put together by a lot of the Allies saying, look, in order to stop a world war happening, we need to stick to this charter, a simple fact. What's happened, of course, is that NATO have actually begun eroding that charter. For example, if you look at the Libya situation now, there are several counts on which they have completely ignored the UN Charter in the actions in Libya. Even instituting a no-fly zone over Libya is against Article 2 of the UN Charter, because what the people said at the end of World War II is there's no excuse to invade or intervene in a country unless that country is actively attacking its neighbours. So just the fact that there's a civil war going on is no excuse to wade in on one side or the other side, because this actually can fuel a wider war. And this is actually what NATO have been doing in Libya. So, you know, I think that's one aspect of... it's just the NATO's own countries. The other thing is the Secretary General of NATO, miraculously, if you look back at the old Bilderberg meetings of the last 20 years or so, always is selected at the Bilderberg conference. So he goes along to a Bilderberg meeting, and sometime over the next few months, suddenly he's crowned King of NATO. So it's quite clear that this is very, very closely connected to the NATO military alliance, which, of course, was supposed to be a defensive alliance. If you remember, you know, the idea was if any of the countries in the NATO alliance got attacked by Russia or anybody else, they would stand together. That was what NATO was
yes,
called.
That's right.
Well, it's gone way beyond that now, and it is now actually a danger to world peace. It's an aggressive military force, and we see NATO leaders in a kind of flight forward, because there's so much chaos, financial financial chaos, etc., going on at home, that they're trying to distract everybody's attention and their own attention into saying, well, let's grab resources around the world and then hopefully our finances will be propped up a little bit. Actually, this is a recipe for disaster and then possibly even a recipe for World War III.
Tony, I've got some points to put to you, and we've got messages coming in from our listeners all the time. With regards to Bilderberg then, I mean, it's been around for since 1954, as you quite rightly said, under a huge veil of secrecy for so long. First point is, do we think then, I mean, it's great to hear you say that we don't think they have anywhere near the power they think they have, but are they, when they meet, seeking a consensus amongst each other to do things like we've seen in Libya and places like that? Are they basically meeting so that they all have their ducks in a row, basically?
I don't think that they are honestly seeking a consensus, because the decisions like the wish to attack Iraq, the decisions like, for example, the will to attack Libya, these are made behind closed doors. At the Bilderberg conference, what happens there is that these ideas are run past waverers, people who may be very powerful one way or another. Say, for example, editor of a newspaper, Will Hutton, when he was editor of the Observer newspaper, was invited along. And I wouldn't consider that Will is actually a fan of the Bilderbergers' economic policy at all. So the idea really is to run these ideas past some of the guests who are there and woo them with the royalty, you know, the kings and queens, the princes who are there, and try to get them on the program, you know, whatever that program happens to be. In the moment, obviously, it's about the attack on Libya and possibly extending that to Iran and further an attack on Pakistan, possibly. And the idea is then that they'll see what the reaction in these politicians particularly is, and if the reaction is good, that politician then gets Bilderberg's backing from behind the scenes, from some of the media people who are connected with Bilderberg and the bankers, etc. But if they don't, then that's it. They're kind of frozen out, you know, and then there'll be whispering campaigns against them and that kind of thing. So in a way, it's a kind of schmooze fest where politicians are groomed, they are looked at. You know, it's almost like a horse fair. We had it described on last week's program. I do a radio show here in Bristol every week, as a kind of horse fair where the bankers and the chief executives of the big corporations of the world and some of the top military people have a look at the quality of the politicians and then make their selection. I mean, you know, it actually makes a complete travesty of democracy. The other thing is, of course, big business is very, very powerful. It has lots and lots of meetings like this. The big banks and the big oil companies, media companies, all the big companies in the world, but particularly here in the NATO countries. And what they want is they actually want to bypass anything to do with the media, and they want to bypass anything to do with democratic process. So this is essentially what Bilderberg are up to, is they are undermining the media. They're trying to monopolize the media with their favored people like Rupert Murdoch, and they're also trying to attack the parliamentary systems. Any kind of democratic system is attacked by Bilderberg and by Bilderberg's friends. I mean, for example, we saw the chief executive of Hollinger, which owned the Daily Telegraph, was Conrad Black. He was a big, big friend of Bilderberg's. He was also a massive union buster. And the other thing was, his newspaper, The Telegraph, was instrumental in stealing the hard drive, getting the hard drive stolen from the House of Commons with the MP's expenses on, which was an operation carried out by a former SAS major, and actually trying to undermine the credibility of MPs through this whole expenses scandal. Now, yes, one or two of the MPs were actually fraudulently claiming expenses. But, of course, this diverted attention from the massive, massive fraud going on in the banking sector.
Yes.
So what they're trying to do is be really smart, these people. They've got so much money, they don't know what to do with it. So basically they're buying off our media and also buying off and trying to undermine and destroy any of our sort of parliamentary style democracy. And we end up, of course, with things like trial by television. You know, what we saw recently with the Colonel Gaddafi being he's basically been everybody all over the TV is talking about how dreadful Gaddafi is. He killed Yvonne Fletcher. No, he didn't. He also is supposed to have blown up the Lockerbie plane. No, he didn't. In fact, documentaries shown on Channel 4 over the last 15 years or so have proven beyond any shadow of a doubt that Yvonne Fletcher, who was shot outside the Libyan embassy administration in London, was not shot from within the embassy. She was shot by somebody else on the other side of the square. So we're seeing this kind of trial by TV as the rule of law is undermined, consistently undermined by these people. And this is why I make the comparison back to the fascists of the 1930s and the 40s, because, you know, that's essentially what fascism is. It's when big business starts to take over, ignores the rule of law, and just starts to do exactly what it wants, enslaving people and treating people like little commodities, little cogs in their giant machine, just to do their slave work for them.
Tony, a couple of quick questions for you. Mick has been on. Mick says, are politicians breaching the terms of their office, and are they breaching the contract they have with the people of their countries or constituency, whatever, by attending something like that?
Any politician that attends this meeting is betraying their country, and I think should be either tried for treason or else simply. I mean, in fact, there are laws in the United States which are actually prohibit this, but it's been proved impossible to actually prosecute for whatever reason. The Supreme Court in the United States kind of freezes up, and court cases get kicked out. I mean, we're living in a world of impunity, aren't we? Because people, one of the major figures of Bilderberg, which is Henry Kissinger, I mean, he's been proven many times to have been involved in war crimes, and yet we don't see him charged at The Hague and standing trial. We see people like Colonel Gaddafi, who, to my knowledge, has never invaded a foreign country or organised a fascist coup, which Henry Kissinger certainly has. So, you know, there's a sort of hypocrisy, really, going on with people like Kissinger managing to get away.
Tony, let me make a point, because something which has disturbed me greatly, like you, I'm a journalist, and I like to think I'm pretty fair. I bring people on from the right and the left, and I give them equal time, and I pretty much let people speak, and I tend to shut up. That's what I do. Let listeners make their mind up. Something which has disturbed me in the last number of years is the failure of the media. Let's just talk about Britain for a second, because we're always hammering America. The failure of the media to actively pursue the question as to why the Right Honourable Tony Blair has not been charged with war crimes and lying to the people of the United Kingdom. Because 30 or 40, even 50 years ago, that would have happened to Blair. He'd be in prison now, wouldn't he?
Well, I think you're quite right. There would be much more criticism of Blair.
Yes.
Unbelievably, you know, we've had, just as a I think quite a good example of all of this is the death of Dr. David Kelly, which, of course, you know, was all related to Tony Blair's Iraq war. Now, it's become very clear that Alistair Campbell was very much involved in this. I mean, he was the guy that released, even though he'd promised he wouldn't, released the name of Kelly to the press, and has also lied about the whole business of the David Kelly affair. And yet, Alistair Campbell is even on Question Time. He's put up by the BBC
as a credible person
who should tell us you know, how to run things. We've got this also with people like I mentioned before, David Aronovich, who is now even chairing a program on Radio 4 here in Britain called The Moral Maze. So he's, you know, what's happening is a really perverse thing with our mainstream press, which is people who are either proven liars or criminals actually being put into positions on the media where they are chairing programs and pontificating. So what we have really is a total, in a way, reversal of the traditional idea that people who have honour and integrity should be running our affairs and be on our TV and arbiting. You know, there isn't actually any real credibility left in this, I don't think. And certainly when I see Alistair Campbell on Question Time telling us, you know, giving moral judgments on which way our country should go and which way it shouldn't, I just literally switch it off.
Tony, you've worked for the BBC. I've done correspondence work from Southern Ireland for the BBC before, for BBC Radio. You love the BBC, I love the BBC, we love the idea of it, as you know, the greatest bastion of free and open and honest reporting in the world. But it has failed abjectly in the last 10 to 15 years, the BBC, to do its job. Why has it failed?
I don't think it has failed, actually. I mean, I'm going to be a bit controversial here.
Go on.
It's what is happening, I think, is as there's a ferment and conflict around the world in places like Libya, Afghanistan, etc. I mean, the Afghan people, most of them are freedom fighters. I don't see them as insurgents. They are doing exactly what we would do if a fascist nation came over and tried to attack our country, which is to defend it, actually defend our own position and our own culture from the invasion from abroad. So as those conflicts are taking place in other countries, I think there's also, in a way, parallel conflicts going on in our democratic institutions. And, of course, the BBC is a very important one. And I think there's a lot of conflict going on at the BBC. It's like a battleground of ideas. And there are sometimes there are people in the BBC who are coming up with very good ideas, and other times very bad ideas. I think that most of the very bad people who are actually trying to literally talk down to people, to use the BBC to control the way people think rather than to reflect public opinion, they are often centred around the news and current affairs departments. And yet, having said that, some of the documentaries, like this recent series by Adam Curtis that's been on British television, called All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace,
yes, brilliant stuff, yeah,
has been absolutely superb. So in a way, I think the best thing to do is just simply switch off the BBC News and be a little bit selective about what you watch, and you can still see some excellent programming. I mean, for example, BBC 4 ran a fantastic interview with broadcaster Annie Nightingale the other week, which was, you know, a great bit of journalism, and she was a fantastic music journalist, or still is herself, but the only thing was that they finished off the programme with a song by Lady Gaga, which I would imagine Annie would be absolutely livid to see that whole programme. There's Annie Nightingale talking about the history of British pop music and pop music generally, and then they put the sort of track on to finish the programme as a signature tune, which is the kind of thing Annie would hate. So you can see there's all sorts of conflicts and backstabbing going on within these major broadcasters to parallel the sorts of battles and fights that are going on in other parts of the world. And obviously there's a similar kind of thing going on with the financial crisis. When we see last weekend we had an announcement by a load of top British economists, and including Dalling Blanchflower, who was a former guy on the Monetary Policy Committee at the Bank of England, saying George Osborne's crashing the economy, we need to go to Plan B right now. And then we see the next day the IMF chief and various other people coming on the television telling us, oh, it's all fine, don't worry about it. So you can see there's a massive kind of clash of ideologies going on, both in our media here in the Western world, and also out there in the field in places like Libya and in Afghanistan. I see them both as part of the same struggle.
Tony, brilliant. Can we pause for 90 seconds and come back and do a further 10 minutes then? Because I've got questions about, but we've got to get back to Bilderberg, because I've got a lot of questions. There are callers trying to get through as well. So let's have that break. Thanks to Tony for staying with us. Tony is a journalist. He presents his own programme on Bristol Radio. He's a former BBC journalist as well. And we're talking about Bilderberg.
From Malaga to Callahonda on 88.9, this is Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Richie Allen, tonight.
Yes, welcome back. Alan has emailed us to say he's shocked. Tony is not the first person that he's heard say that there may very well be plans to escalate the situation in Libya and possibly further down the line go after Pakistan and maybe go after Ahmadinejad's regime in Iran. He's horrified by that. Peter's been on to say that powerful business interests may well have been behind the MP's expenses scandal, but Peter says it wasn't Conrad Black. He was already in prison at the time of the information theft. At the time, the newspaper was and still is owned by the Barclay brothers, who bought it from Hollinger. They are private people who live in the Channel Islands and shun personal publicity, says Peter. Thank you, Peter. Tony, welcome back. What do you say to that?
Well, about the Telegraph, I think it's basically a culture. There's a culture at the Telegraph. When the ownership changes, you know, it doesn't mean to say all the management and all of the journalists and all of the editors all change at the same time. Also, I mean, you know, the newspapers build up kind of alliances within the establishment in Britain. And just because we've got a change of ownership doesn't mean to say that the ship is changing direction. Conrad Black clearly handed over the Telegraph to people he thought were going to carry on the tradition. And also the Barclay twins are, yes, they've got this kind of little island in Brecu out on the Channel Islands. They're tax exiles, and they have their own agenda, just as Conrad Black did, which is also about corporate expansion. It's not about parliamentary democracy. I don't think that the owners of the Telegraph are really interested in that, because if they were, they'd be handing over much more of their massive earnings over to the taxpayer. You know, they're actually afraid of the MPs because they know the MPs are going to come after their cash.
Thanks. We got to get to some questions, Tony. Thanks for that. Michael has been on to say, he says, look, Jim Tucker was after the Bilderbergers for many years. He's in Switzerland now. I know he is. We were trying to get him on with you tonight to have a chat. Jim has said in the past that he spoke with Margaret Thatcher. Thatcher apparently said to him he said to her, how does it feel to have been kind of pulled down by the Bilderbergers? To which she allegedly replied to him, it was an honour to be seen as that important, to be interfered with by the Bilderbergers. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that we're in a very, very different situation with Cameron. She was very pally with Victor Rothschild, Margaret Thatcher. Rothschild was behind things like the poll tax and various other things. If you read Spycatcher, there's some very good stuff in there about it. And also, Victor Rothschild was the person who got Margaret Thatcher to sack the Director General of the BBC back in 1986, which was the last decent Director General the BBC ever had. But, I think she was basically taken out. She'd got to a point where she thought she could actually have her own views, and she decided that the European Central Bank was not a good idea, and as soon as she decided that, she was bumped out. It's as simple as that. Within a few days of saying that Ireland refused to hand over this sovereign nation to 13 unelected bankers, within weeks, she was being kicked out of office. So, you know, if you're going to go along with someone like Victor Rothschild and with these internationalists and the big corporate people, you better make sure that you don't get any of your own ideas like Margaret Thatcher did, otherwise you're going to be out.
Isn't that incredible? To think that a Prime Minister of the authority of Margaret Thatcher could be moved against by a group of financiers and business people who don't like the way she's moving, so just have her moved out.
Well, there is a plan, you see, I think, for consolidation in Europe, in a kind of United States of Europe, and Bilderberg has been absolutely key since the 1950s in putting that all together. The only trouble is, it's totally anti-democratic. All of the policies are put together by a very good website on this, by the way, and group, is the Corporate Europe Observatory people and State Watch in Holland. They're really good on all this stuff, which is showing how the European Union has been deliberately put together to allow big corporations to make policy and to run everything. I mean, these MPs have got, you know, if you talk to any of these Euro MPs, although they're elected, and in fact by quite a good fair system, you know, proportional representation system, they have no power whatever, because if they vote something down, what happens is that the Commission, which takes all of its ideas from the European Roundtable of Industrialists, which is just a corporate think tank, basically, and all of the new laws come from them, and none of them are elected. So what happens is, if a piece of legislation comes through Europe and it's voted down by the MEPs, it just comes back in a different form, as we saw with the Lisbon Treaty in Ireland. I mean, you have to laugh that they think that this has got anything to do with democracy. Of course it hasn't. It's a total sham. And actually, it's a fascist system, because it means that big money and big corporations are telling us what to do. Not only that, but they're making all our laws for us.
Crazy. Linda has been on to say, through MSN, thanks Linda, she says, will you ask Tony Ritchie, what sort of people can we expect to be in St Moritz in Switzerland over the next few days? Names, who do we suspect will be there, Tony?
Well, I would imagine, I mean, it's one of the things I'd really be interested to see is whether Kenneth Clark, the British Justice Secretary, is going to be there, because he was the main convener for the UK for Bilderberg for many years until he became Justice Secretary. The other thing is, we should look at Ed Balls and George Osborne, because both of them are previous attenders of the Bilderberg conferences, and both of them are supposed to be the opposite sides of the political spectrum here in Britain in criticising the financial crisis. So these are the kinds of people I'll be looking at, but you never really know. This is why it's really important that there are people down there actually taking photographs of these various participants as they go into the hotel, if they possibly can, and actually getting names out. And the weird thing about it is, quite a lot of these people, you know, because I've been to some of these conferences, you take a photograph of someone as they're going in, and you think, you know, that person, they look important, but I don't know who they are. And, of course, you then find out that somebody is, for example, the deputy chairman of the IMF, or, you know, one of these very, very high up, very, very powerful people. But, of course, most of the most powerful people in the Western world, in the NATO zone, the money, the financial people, the chief executive, for example, for Rupert Murdoch, is someone that we've never ever seen on our television screens. And it's not surprising these people want to stay out of the limelight, because they're basically like a bunch of crooks getting together to fix up things in their own interests and to our demise.
We were talking a little bit about the BBC, not to dwell too much on them, but the only mention of it on the BBC has been on bbc.co.uk on the magazine section of the programme, of the website. And they have an article there in the magazine section, Tony, which basically talks about the Bilderberg from a kind of a humorous point of view, that it's funny that people think that there's some sort of conspiracy going on there. But what there isn't is any real investigation by the BBC as to what the hell is going on there.
Well, I think that's partially because one of their trustees is an attender of the Bilderberg conferences, Marcus Agius, and he swears to secrecy when he goes in there. He's a former banker. He swears to secrecy. Now, I think and people who work as journalists in the BBC don't necessarily want to cross their managers and editors because they may find themselves out of a job when their contract not renewed. So this is the usual way in which these Bilderberg people try and divert attention from the gravity of what's actually happening there in St. Moritz this weekend. All they can do is to try very hard to mix up these hard facts about the dangers of fascism, the dangers of the rise of the destruction of the rule of law, with stupid theories about aliens, and it's a last-ditch attempt to confuse the public. One of the biggest proponents of this is this guy, David Aronovich, who is now chairing the Moral Maze, unbelievably. And he's actually, a quote from him is, he's saying that concern, in fact, in that article he's saying today, concern is ridiculous. Now, I think concern is absolutely necessary if we believe in democracy, and clearly David Aronovich doesn't. He believes in fascism if he thinks concern is ridiculous.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It horrifies me to think that people from my country, the Republic of Ireland, maybe there isn't anybody from the Republic of Ireland.
Listen, one thing you must be really clear about here is it's only a tiny minority that actually get involved with these people, and they are becoming increasingly marginalised. You know, the amazing thing about Bilderberg, I think, is that they're saying basically, just trust us, we're having a little private meeting. Well, of course, we can't. You look at the military side of Bilderberg, that's been a total disaster, ripping up the most important document in the international law, which is the UN Charter, and then we look at the financial side of what they're doing. Well, I mean, that's been a total disaster as well, either through incompetence or just through mafia-style fraud. I mean, they're basically just a bunch of gangsters in suits in that building.
Tony's the caller on there.
If I was the head of the Swiss police, I'd be in there and arresting them.
Yeah, you would be, as would any sane person. We've got a caller on the line. Caller, good evening. Would you like to make a point?
Hello, Richie. Good evening.
Hi, Veronica. How are you?
Hi, everybody. Somebody threw a name at me, which is Cygerni, Cygernie, and they said that this particular organisation is more powerful than the Bilderbergs. If you know anything about it, maybe Richie could get you on to talk about it at some stage. Would that be possible?
Have you heard anything about that, Tony?
No, I've never heard of that, no. I don't think there is anything quite... I mean, the thing is with Bilderberg, you have to understand, there's two aspects to it, really. There's the meeting itself, which is taking place this coming weekend with 120, 130 participants. Mm. But there's also a steering group, which up until recently, Kenneth Clark, the Justice Secretary in Britain, was on, and various other people. And that steering committee is, I think, you know, one of the most powerful and one of the most dangerous organisations on the planet.
Absolutely.
It doesn't mean to say that they're actually in any way have any kind of global control or power. It's, of course, only really in the NATO zone that these people are focused. And Thierry Masson's article on the Voltaire Network recently said that. And you can see a lot of the links to things like this on my website, bilderberg.org. Bilderberg do have their own website. But I think actually that steering committee, which is chaired by Henry Kissinger and David Rockefeller, that is probably the place to be looking at if you want to look for corruption and fascism in the modern world.
Thanks for that, Veronica. Good to hear from you, by the way.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
Thanks a lot. Tony, we're going to have to wrap up because we're rapidly running out of time, unfortunately. We generally
do. Can I just say one thing?
You can, of course. Go ahead.
I think that's, it's important to recognise the kind of political leaders that we may have today if it wasn't for the Bilderberg. We're talking about people like Robin Cook, who was very, very outspoken against NATO and resigned in principle. He would have probably been the leader of the Labour Party when Tony Blair stepped down. It would almost have been certain to have been Robin Cook, but of course he had a rather strange accident up on a mountain.
He did, yeah.
Up in Scotland. There's also Charles Kennedy, who would have been in charge of the Liberal Democrat Party and in a very, very powerful position now in Britain if it hadn't been for this sort of strange public relations guy, Nick Clegg, I think his name is, who took over from him. And of course Charles Kennedy was bounced out because he was supposed to have drunk too much. Now look at Winston Churchill all the way through the Second World War. The other sort of leader that we may have is John Smith. He actually attended a Bilderberg conference just before he died and made it very, very clear to the Bilderbergs that their economics was absolute nonsense, and if they'd listened back in those days, we wouldn't be in the mess we are now.
It's incredible stuff, Tony, isn't it? It's incredible stuff, it really is. It's going on tomorrow right through till Sunday. What we'll hear from it, we'll keep in touch with the journalists who we know are attending. I mean, we'll get Jim Tucker on to give us his opinions. Tony, people can read more about you on bilderberg.org. And thanks very much for coming on. We will have you on again, Tony. It was great to talk to you tonight.
That's fine. And also, you know, you do check out Charlie Skelton's articles in The Guardian, because it's great, because, you know, the BBC have completely let us down with this ridiculous article today, but... The Guardian have been doing a fantastic job.
Brilliant stuff. Tony Gosling, thank you very much. Have a good evening. Thank you.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Not at all. That was Tony Gosling there. Tony's a former BBC journalist. He's been covering Bilderberg for years. And also he presents his own programme in Bristol on radio there. And you can read more about Tony. And there's a wealth of information about Bilderberg. It's a great website I've been looking through today. It's bilderberg.org. Let's take a break then.